monthly podcast on the spoken word, episode number 87, April 2025. Roticity. Watch your R's. Hello, Paul Meyer here. Welcome back. Guess that accent. Last time I played this clip from the Idea Archive and challenged you to say where on the planet the speaker grew up.
This other one, he often used to call me what I thought he was calling me, a daft aphid. And I knew aphids to be small green insects that lived on plants. I couldn't even figure it out. But later as an adult, I did find out that what he was saying was, you're a daft Hapneyworth. We still had, no, we didn't have Hapneys then, or did we? I can't remember. It was well before we had decimal coins anyway. We did know pennies and shillings and things, but yeah. So, yeah, I've built up, learned a lot of those kinds of phrases without actually knowing what on earth they meant, but they were very fascinating nonetheless.
What's your guess? Australia? New Zealand? South Africa? Somewhere else? If you picked New Zealand, congratulations, it was Ideas New Zealand 3. For the full recording and all the documentation, go to Accents and Dialects on the menu tab of dialectsarchive.com, then Australia/Oceania, then New Zealand. The subject, listed as Caucasian, born and raised in Auckland, was contributed by Linda Cartwright. Thanks again, Linda. Now, this month's challenge. Where did the speaker spend her formative years?
I was planning to go to work very early, like 4 o'clock in the morning, because it was a holiday, a school holiday, and then I was going to go with the children somewhere to have fun after work, coming home early. But somehow I was too tired and I decided not to do it. And I was very tired sleeping when my daughter started to shake me up, that, Mommy, Mommy, it's an earthquake.
What's your guess? Get the answer next time. If you're not listening to me right now on paulmeyer.com, that's the best source. Why not switch over now? Select In a Manner of Speaking from the Other Services menu tab and click episode number 87. You'll find some tasty extras there, not available on any other podcast channel. No guest this month, just me. I do solo podcasts occasionally. This is my 15th such episode. So, roticity is my topic today. R-H-O-T-I-C-I-T-Y. I love that word. It comes from Rho, R-H-O, the 17th letter of the Greek alphabet, the letter R. It's the most interesting letter in the alphabet, at least I think so. To me, it's the most conspicuous phonetic variable between languages, dialects, and accents. How are they dealing with the letter R? That's the first question I ask myself when getting to grips with a new dialect or accent. Do they use the trilled R, as in bring, or the tapped R, as in bring, or the weak English semivowel R, as in bring, or perhaps the uvular trill or fricative, as the French do, as in bring? That, by the way, is not made with the tongue tip, but by the back of the tongue against the uvula. Or perhaps they're using some other shade of R, as in India, bring. That sound's made by the tongue tip hitting the roof of the mouth a little further back, what phoneticians call a retroflex consonant. Russians, perhaps, early on in their study of English, using the sound from their own language, might say, real strength relies on spiritual growth, with the tongue tip striking the alveolar ridge, that little bump behind the top teeth, a couple of times for each R in the sentence. That's one of the drills in my A Russian Accent manual, by the way. Same thing with Italian-accented English. A practice sentence in my Italian accent manual for this sound is, normal mothers are here to charm the forceful nurse. For these various ways of sounding the letter R, go to the interactive IPA charts on my website and click on the symbols to hear my demonstration and read all the fine detail. That's paulmeyer.com/IPA charts, all one word. My dear colleague Eric Armstrong and I designed these charts many years ago, and he and I wrote a scholarly article on the R topic. I'll put that article on the webpage too for this episode. I also made an app that you can use on the go. So far, I've been talking about how the letter R is pronounced when it occurs before a vowel, as in rice, price, break, trick, around, etc., functioning entirely as a consonant to kick off a syllable. However, The terms rhotic and non-rhotic usually refer to the treatment of the letter R when it follows a vowel, as in nurse, start, north, letter, etc. Here we're talking about the rhotic style, nurse, start, north, letter, versus the non-rhotic style, nurse, start, north, letter. I spoke those words first in general American English and then in general British English. So the general American speaker would say, "Far worse and larger were the wars of yore, I heard." But the general British speaker would say, "Far worse and larger were the wars of yore, I heard." That's a practice sentence from my standard British English dialect manual, by the way. So the general American English speaker uses rhoticity or R coloration when the R follows the vowel. The general British English speaker does not. A word about these different accent and dialect manuals of mine. You can buy them either as single dialect booklets, a hard copy with a CD, or two different ebook formats, or collected, all of them, into Accents and Dialects for Stage and Screen. That big 436-page book is a collection of all 27 accents and dialects I offer. Audio delivered either by accompanying CDs or as streaming audio files. The streaming audio files version is the best value. It works out at under $3 a dialect. Such a deal! You can browse them under the Shop for Accents tab on the menu bar at paulmeyer.com. You got a taste for trivia? Have you ever wondered about the way most Americans and an increasing number of Brits and Aussies and others treat the letter T in a phrase like little city? It's actually a tapped R you're hearing, not a T at all. Prove it to yourself. Contrast the words ladder, L-A-D-D-E-R, and ladder, L-A-T-T-E-R. Ladder, ladder. Can you hear the subtle difference when I say them carefully and in isolation? Ladder, ladder. I had two ladders, my former ladder and my latter ladder. I preferred the latter ladder. Pretty indistinguishable in connected speech, right? Rhoticity. Gotta say it again. Love it. English, for most of its long life, has been a rhotic dialect. I guess that's proved by the presence of the letter R in burn, barn, born, etc. After all, why bother to spell such words with an R if the R is silent? David Crystal, in podcast episode number 68 with me, English Through the Ages, tells the fascinating story of how the R disappeared from the most prestigious speech in England. We're talking here about the development of received pronunciation. Earliest usage cited in Oxford English Dictionary, 1710. RP, as a term, is now being replaced by other labels like Standard Southern British English. However, as David Whittley observes, RP is far from RIP. I've told this story elsewhere, but it deserves a retelling, I think. My mother and her 8 brothers and sisters were born and raised in Andover, Hampshire, in England. Hampshire is a rural county, some 100 miles west of London. The ordinary folk there, at least in the early 20th century, still spoke a rhotic dialect. My granny and granddad, Mum's parents, were definitely ordinary folk and spoke that way. But, by a still unexplained stroke of fortune, perhaps an inheritance, they were able to move from their two-up, two-down row house into a very much larger house with 7 bedrooms. That catapulted them into the middle class, perhaps even the upper middle class. Many upper-middle-class speakers in Hampshire spoke RP, or close to it, a non-rhotic dialect. So moving into their grand new house posed an immediate threat to their rhoticity. Now, add this. Back then, in the 1920s or so, at about age 11, all kids in England took an exam called the Common Entrance Exam. If you failed it, the system channeled you into an education emphasizing less intellectual and more practical subjects. For these kids, college or university was definitely not on the horizon. If you passed it, you were admitted to the local grammar school, a feeder for the universities. In Mum's part of the world, those who failed the exam continued to speak rhotically. Those who passed dropped their rhoticity. Isn't that fascinating? My mother, three of her brothers, four of the nine kids passed that exam and went on to the grammar school. They became RP speakers until they drew their last breath. The five other siblings failed the exam, and their speech remained rhotic all their lives. A generation later, I passed the exam too. It was by now called the 11 plus exam, and RP was what my parents and teachers and fellow grammar school pupils expected to hear coming out of my mouth. In fact, my drama school education at the prestigious Rose Bruford College of Speech and Drama explicitly demanded RP from the students in our everyday speech. Not just in our stage speech. You simply didn't get your diploma if you didn't speak RP. And my later university education just reinforced that. But after I married my wife, an American, Marilyn and I moved back to the US in our early 20s. And except for a few years back in England, have been based in the US ever since. My speech became rhotic once again. Perhaps it reminded me of the Hampshire dialect that I learned at my grandfather's knee. Perhaps I just wanted to assimilate in my new country, like so many immigrants to the US. Didn't want to stand out. You can hear that rhoticity in my speech now, a mid-Atlantic or transatlantic manner of speaking. Want to hear a drill from my Hampshire dialect? He planted 40 new trees down by the stream last Thursday. You're hearing eight other signature sounds at work in that practice sentence, in addition to the rhoticity on 40 and Thursday. My Hampshire manual is a very useful go-to source when you're cast in a British period piece as a rustic or provincial character, particularly if their home county isn't specified. Below stairs characters in Jane Austen's stories come to mind. Now, this is some really subtle stuff. You have to be a real phonetic nerd to find this as sexy as I do. So skip ahead a couple of minutes if you aren't. Here are three subtly different pronunciations of the word word. All three are rhotic, as you will hear, but the rhoticity is achieved in very different ways. Here goes. Word. 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 Again. Word. 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 In the first, word. I'm using tongue curling. I'm curling my tongue up and back to get the rhotic quality. Word. In the second, word. Instead of tongue curling, my tongue is flat on the floor of the mouth. And the rhotic quality comes simply from rounding my lips. Word. In the third, word. My tongue is still flat on the floor of the mouth, but in addition to the lip rounding, I'm adding so-called tongue bunching, muscular tension, and tongue root tension. Word. This is useful information for dialect coaches, if only because different rhotic dialects use different strategies to convey rhoticity. Hampshire dialect speakers seem to favour the tongue curling trick, while I find general American speakers more likely to use not tongue curling, but lip rounding, tongue bunching, and tongue root tension. Perhaps just one of those strategies, perhaps two, or perhaps all three. Okay, exit super nerd, stage left. Oh, by the way, several other episodes of this podcast should be on your playlist and speak to this topic. My very first episode back in 2018 was all about Shakespeare's original pronunciation, a completely rhotic dialect. We explored the non-rhotic speech of Australia in episode 12 with Linda Nichols-Gidley. David Crystal's second appearance, episode number 22, was devoted to RP. Episode 61 with Malachy O'Neill was about Irish, a language in danger. Irish and Irish-accented English are rhotic. How American English Got Its Start, episode number 70 with Karen Burgos, is definitely on the playlist. Our conversation with Barry Kranick is all about transatlantic and old movie dialects, episode number 78, exploring the R-less versions of American English of yesteryear. Cameron joined me on that one. Let's close this episode by zooming in on North America, because there's lots of non-rhotic speech in North America, just as there's lots of rhotic speech in Britain and Ireland. I have dialect manuals for South Boston, affectionately known as Southie, Down East New England, American Southern, focusing on the Mid-South, Deep South, self-explanatory, and New York. Plenty of non-rhotic dialects in those areas. Which dialect am I speaking with this practice sentence? The five companies shared a fine, stylish horse farm in bluegrass country. That, I'm sure you guessed, Mid-South. This one. Charlie was certain that he normally passed the park a lot earlier. Guess that one? Down East New England. How about this one? My brother works hard in the store office. Yep, you guessed it. New York. This one? The Third Army's idea called for storming the castle in early March. That's South Boston. Southie. How are you doing? Did you notice the Bostonian pronunciation of idea with rhoticity? Idea. One more. Farmers must face the weather every day of the year, come rain or shine. No prizes for that one, Deep South. Unfortunately, it's a style that's disappearing fast, particularly the rhotic aspect of things. I expect you're gathering. I could devote a very, very long book just to rhoticity. But I hope you've enjoyed this overview. Thanks for joining me today. Don't forget to follow Paul Meyer Dialect Services on Facebook and Instagram, and me on X or Twitter at DialectPaul. Email me with your comments and questions, paul@paulmeyer.com. I have two guests next month, and Cameron Meyer, our co-producer, will join me again. Our guests are Tanner Marshall, one of IDEA's distinguished senior editors, and Michael McAuliffe, an expert in speech-to-text. Tanner was the dialect coach for The Brutalist, the Oscar-nominated film that attracted attention for its use of AI in the star's Hungarian language dialogue. Michael McAuliffe, a linguistics professor at the University of British Columbia, is working in the speech tech industry on conversational voice assistance. My thanks to Mary Minton for alerting me to his recent participation at the University of Washington Linguistics Colloquium, which led to his appearance next month on this podcast. Should be fascinating. See you next time on In a Manner of Speaking.